And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 4th, 2021. I'm J.E. Skeets, rolling this morning with the Bassmaster, ripping them lips, Trey Kirby.
Hey, yo!
We got the international man of mystery taking it to the max. Lee Ellis.
Friend.
Lily. Last but not least, making the magic happen, it's JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live here on YouTube. Make sure you like and you comment and you subscribe. We're nearing in on 22,000 subs. I want 25,000 by the end of the week.
Yeah,
I want 50,000 by the end of the month. I want 100,000 by the end of the season. So let's do it. Tell your friends about No Dunks on YouTube. Email us your NBA questions and comments to nodunks@theathletic.com. We have, I was going to say penciled it in, but we put it in marker. Wednesday, we're hitting the beach to answer your questions and comments. We got a whole bunch of them, but keep sending them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Go grab yourself some sweet No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com. Immaculate items, always available for sale. JD, you and I rocking the same white No Dunks hoodie here today. Looking
nice
fresh.
Items right there.
Very nice item. And where's Tassie? Well, I'll tell you where Tassie is. He's already up on your YouTube channel. He's already in your No Dunks podcast feed. Trying something a little different here in the new year. A little what you need to know mini sort of recap podcast. Tass leading the charge on that. It's like a 5 to 10 minute recap of the big games and news. I'm looking at it like a little nice appetizer here before the main course. So that's already up on your No Dunks podcast feed, already up on YouTube. Tass and JD knocking the first one out of the park, and that's going to continue. That's going to be like, you know, ideally like a Monday through Friday thing. Tass will be back here and there during the daily show, the longer format show. So you're going to have even more No Dunks in your life, Lily. Can you handle it, mate?
Oh, I think I can, yeah. Not just a what you got, a what you need.
That's right. A what you need to know. Again, so go check that out. It's a perfect way to sort of like keep up on what's going on, and then we'll do the deep dives here. And that's what we're doing on Monday. You know, always a blast, these shows. Usually long, because we're doing weekend winners and losers. Spoiler too. The wedgies are back, baby.
Back in
we'll
2021.
Show you those. Yes, oh. I told you. I told you, man. They come in bunches, and they were coming fast and furious over the weekend. Trey's got tweet of the night. We got lots here. So let's get into it. We're actually going to flip it on its head here and start with losers of the weekend, Trey, because you had such a fantastic spin on one, I thought, that we got to lead with it. So, Trey, NBA weekend, loser of the weekend goes to...
Well, Skeets, to be completely honest, coming into 2021, I wanted to be purely positive energy.
Okay.
But I gotta say, the losers of the weekend are the Steph Curry haters. How dare you? Biggest losers of the weekend. The people who were on Twitter all weekend complaining, can Steph Curry carry a team? Steph Curry is overrated. Steph Curry is back! 62 points in a win against the Blazers yesterday, 21 in the first quarter. It was a career high for Steph. It was a chase center high, which is something that people were caring about last night. It felt like 2015 all over again. In particular to me, November 2015, when Steph Curry basically won his unanimous MVP, just coming out and dominating, shooting every time he crossed half court, knocking down the threes. That's what it felt like to me last night, especially when Steph hit the three to put him to 59. The Warriors get a stop on the other end. They come back down. Draymond drops it back off to him for the three with 62. Steph runs down the court doing the Jason Terry, arms out. It felt like a throwback to 5 years ago. After the game, Steph Curry literally said, you know, cue the Jordan meme. I took all that personally. He said that in a press conference. Yeah. I love a high haters performance. It's Jordan-esque to do it. Curry last night, incredible. If you were hating on this guy over the weekend, straight up, you're a loser. I'm sorry, it's 2021, but you're a loser.
I don't think you're wrong there. It's a nice reminder, Lee, that there are a few things more enjoyable to watch in sports, really, than Chef Curry when he's cooking. And he had it going there, 62, as Trey said.
And just having fun, as you mentioned there, Trey. That one that gave him the 62 was just like a kid out there shooting baskets, having fun with his friends, which is great. And that's what Steph brought to the game when he really exploded onto the scene, that joy and that emotion of just having fun out there, which is great. But I have to be honest, like, I know there was some chit chatter out there about Steph. You know, he's not that good anymore, and he needs to have a good season to define his legacy. Like, that's all bullshit anyway. Like, anyone with any credibility or respect doesn't think that Steph has to go out there and prove anything to anybody. Mm. He changed the game. He changed the league. The Warriors for a couple of years there were the most incredible thing to watch, largely because of what Steph Curry did, and we're still seeing the ramifications of the way that he played and shot the ball. Playing out today, you see guys like Damian Lillard, for example, shooting from like 10 feet behind the three-point line. That didn't happen consistently until Steph started doing it. So all that sort of nonsense and noise. I mean, look, to be honest, I was deep diving into Cobra Kai 3 this weekend, so I didn't see a whole lot of it on Twitter. But, you know,
good.
When I saw the people this morning, you know, on Twitter, were just like, he shut up the haters. I'm just like, no one of any responsible credibility in the media said anything that made any sense anyway about Steph. He's a Hall of Famer. He's absolutely moonwalking into the Hall of Fame. He's only building on his legacy. Will he win another championship? Who knows? Maybe, maybe not. Will he win another MVP? Maybe, maybe not. But that stuff doesn't matter for what he has done for the game already and what he continues to do. He's an incredible role model, incredible player. And it was great to see him actually, you know, with a little bit of fire last night, being like, I really want to go out there and send a message. And he did that. And it was a great win and a great result for him.
Yeah, we are giving the haters loser of the weekend, but we should, in a weird way, be applauding them, right, Trey? Because if this is what it takes to get Steph Curry to just, like, shoot every time, good on you. I mean, keep talking your shit, because I'll ask you this. Was it a coincidence this career night happened against Lillard? Because that's where a lot of the chatter comes from, right? I mean, especially after what happened the game prior where the Blazers hammer the Warriors, and there's always been this pitting of, like, you know, is Lillard a better point guard? Is better than Curry at this point? You know, I don't think it's much of a coincidence. I know they're playing in the back-to-back situations here, the old baseball series, but he's obviously saw the tweets, heard the chatter, and, you know, I'm sure saw the comparisons, and so he picks the right team or right player to go up and drop 62 on, no?
I don't think it's a coincidence, Skeetsy. Like you're saying, people are saying, is what Steph Curry does now special anymore? Damian Lillard can do it. And there was some incredible moments between Curry and Lillard in this game, trading threes back and forth. Damian Lillard does play the most Steph Curry-like game in the league, mm-hmm. but it's still a Steph Curry-like game. And I don't think it is a coincidence that Steph would come out and put up career-high numbers against Lillard. I mean, surely it helps going against the Blazers, not a lockdown defensive team. But it's just great to see Steph get untracked. It's a great throwback, man. When Steph Curry is rolling, there are few better watches in the NBA. Yeah. And it felt like it's been a long time since we've seen Steph really be truly in the zone.
Yeah, but what's wild with this, the 62 career high, you know, not 15 three-pointers, Lee. He was doing a lot of it inside the arc. He hit 8 threes, don't get me wrong. 8 of 16 from 3. But, like, that's, like, pretty pedestrian for Steph Curry, let's be honest. 10 of 15 from two-point range. He made 18 of 19 free-throw attempts. Trey mentioned it. Sure helps when you have got Cantor and Melo out there in high pick-and-roll situations. You can attack that. You can exploit that. And he did. I knew something was brewing in this game. I don't want to pat myself on the back here like I'm Horowitz or something that. But I knew something was brewing because at the end of the first quarter, he had 21. So I'm tweeting that out like, oh, this could be a big one. But then the final possession of the first half, Kelly Oubre Jr. was on a fast break. He got tied up. It was a jump ball. The Warriors somehow come up with the ball. So final possession. Curry's ISOing on the wing. He drives into more help. Then he keeps driving and his layup gets blocked by Nurk. Okay. You know, a pointless sort of play at the end of the half. But it was how Curry reacted to getting blocked that I noticed. He was like, pretty pissed off. The ball came back to his hands and he sort of gave it a couple angry dribbles and he's got his mouth guard hanging out of his mouth. And you can actually see him. It's pretty cool. You can see him mimic to himself, I should have shot the floater. Like he's sort of like, he's like mentally going, why did I beat my first guy. Then the second guy came. I probably had a chance to float it up there and I kept going to the rim and then Nurk got me at the rim with the blocking my layup. But he's like, it was there. I should have shot that. I should have had that little floater. So he was just feeling himself last night. And Again, like you guys have all said, it's so great when he explodes. And it was a weird one because it wasn't 15 threes. It was attack, attack, attack.
But you know what I really love? 31 shot attempts plus Skeets. Yeah. You mentioned the 19 free throws. That's a whole bunch more shooting possessions as well. For five seasons, the Warriors have been a team that's kind of a system. Like Steph Curry makes the system work. Klay Thompson makes the system work. But Steph is the kind of guy who will give up the ball, run around a bunch and get it back. He was just shooting every single time last night. And that's what the Warriors need from Steph Curry this year. It's not about being nice and being fair to your teammates. I would like Kelly Oubre to have a great season too. I would like Andrew Wiggins to lead the league in, or lead the team in scoring if you're envisioning the correct scenarios. But if you want to win games, let your best guy shoot the ball every single time. It worked last night.
Yeah, Draymond Green basically said as much after the game too. Like, let's just have him shoot. Lee, are you wearing a Wiggins Warriors jersey or is that free? Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
Not quite, no. Look, let's be honest. Wiggy has gotten a little bit better. He's actually doing other things out there, like he's grabbing one rebound a game and one assist and a steal. But until he does it
up yesterday,
until he does it for 25 games straight, there's just no way I'm going to buy back into any Wiggins stock. But the other thing about Steph, you know, you mentioned the shooting and the fun out there a couple of times as well, shaking his defender like we used to see there. You know, like where he would sort of just dance with Gary Trent Jr., whoever it was, and it's hilarious to see like. When you see Steph do it to a big guy like a Rudy Gobert, that kind of happens because the big guy's at a disadvantage. When is a guy about the same size as Steph and he can still shake him and send him flying? To me, that's still a great part, an underrated part of the game where it's just sort of like, you see that, it's like, it's street ball. It's like, I'm just going to dance and dance and dance. You don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll step back and hit a three. Maybe I'll drive inside. Maybe I'll just pull up for a mid-ranger, but I'm in complete control. And I think, again, he just had that confidence there flowing last night. He was just feeling it. And that's what he was trying to do, is just say, like, I can shoot this anytime I want. I can try to get this shot off anytime I want. It doesn't matter who's defending me. And it's another beautiful thing to watch because listen, we talk about LeBron, his underrated passing. Steph's handle's underrated in my mind.
Nice.
Yeah, he's got, like, Jamal Crawford-like handles. So I agree with you with that.
Yeah.
This is funny. I mean, he's being sort of, like, critiqued or doubted. After now putting up 62, that helps, don't get me wrong. He's averaging 32.3 points per game on 46% shooting, 36% from three, six assists, basically five rebounds. And the Warriors, respectable now, 3-3. I mean, they're 500. They would be in the playoffs if they started today. So it's not even that bad. So it is weird that chatter sort of was amplified over the weekend, even though Lee wasn't catching any of it. How was Cobra Kai, by the way? Season three?
Please don't ask me because I'm going to absolutely spoil it for everybody.
Okay. So yeah, the Warriors are looking good, and I hope we just continue to get a couple of these Steph performances, Trey.
Totally. I hope we see more of them. My favorite stat from last night, Steph Curry, 62, Kelly Oubre, 58 on the season. Like the stream team is saying, Draymond coming back, it certainly helps. It pushes Eric Paschal to the bench. Draymond can make plays. We saw in that 62-point shot where he had the little flip back. Yep. He just knows what he's doing out there. And it certainly helps the Warriors having another all-star on the court. So, yeah, a good weekend for the Warriors. And, you know, they also gave us two wedgies, which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
So, you know, it felt like 2015 all over again. Feeling good. I don't know. Maybe I'll cut my hair now.
Oh, wow.
Ooh,
No way. All right, well, I'll continue with the loser of the NBA weekend. I got to give it to the Kings. Which is incredible. Last week, I was talking up the Kings. I was all on board.
Never do it.
But I did say, if you remember, I said, oh, well, now that we've talked glowingly about Sacramento, something will happen. It's inevitable. They're the Kangs. Someone will get injured or something will happen. Well, everything basically went wrong. They lost back-to-back games to the Rockets. Okay. A decent Rockets team, but you don't want to drop both here in these weird series. They lost rookie Tyrese Haliburton to a bone bruise. In his left wrist. He's going to be reevaluated in a week. That's not good. That guy's like a glue guy for them, despite being a rookie. He makes the wheels turn a little bit. And then they lost all good vibes that they maybe had going with Marvin Bagley III's father's trade request on Twitter. So Bagley 2 doing Bagley 3 dirty. It's pretty damn silly. Now, he deleted the tweet, but he's basically saying, trade my son ASAP because he's not getting, you know, the opportunity that obviously Father Bagley thinks he deserves. Because Bagley's minutes in the second half of games has been cut pretty drastically, but it's not like he's really, like, earning them hardcore. I mean, he's averaging 12-8 and he's shooting 38%. And I'm bumping that up in about 25 minutes per game, which is, by the way, sixth on the team. So it's not like he's buried on the bench or anything. But, you know, 37.5%. The guy's 6'11". That's rough. So, you know, Luke Walton has made decisions here where he's going with Holmes and stuff like that in close games or in fourth quarters. But Dad Bags is not happy. And, you know, as Jason Jones, I think he wrote on The Athletic, he's like, perhaps the Kings cannot have nice things or surprisingly good players because there will always be some kind of distraction on the horizon. So it's really disappointing. I mean, again, I'm still high on the Kings. I like a lot of their talent. I'm obviously a huge Fox fan. I like what Buddy's doing. Even Holmes has been really, really solid. Of course, we talked up Halliburton. And Bagley was making progress even, but then this comes and just sort of blows it all up because now, you know, Bagley the third, he's in a tough spot, Lee, because, you know, if he supports his dad, it looks like he's agreeing with him and wants to be traded or at least wants more of a prominent role. And if he says he doesn't want to be traded, well, then he's going against his pops. I mean, it's stupid. Now, and he was been asked about it, and he sort of skirted around it, said, oh, I just want to focus on the game. It's just brutal. Kings.
Yeah, look, Bagley's career is going to be defined by a couple of things. Obviously, the Kings are bypassed on Trae Young and Luka Doncic. Doncic is struggling a little bit this season, but Trae Young's on fire. But also, Bagley's been really battling injuries for a lot of his career. He hasn't really been able to get out on the court for long periods and show what he's good. Because I think he's a capable player. You know, he can stretch the floor. He's a big guy. He's an okay defender. But until we see a sustained period of performance from him, you can't really be out in there saying, I want out of the Kings. I mean, this is a situation where, like, you really should be the one who's, you know, taking the Kings to that next level. Because I think he is a talented player. He's one of those guys you're like, you just got to stay healthy, stay on the court, and just see if things can come together. But it's the Kings. And again, as you sort of mentioned there, things always sort of seem to just blow up in their face. They had a good start, two good wins over the Denver Nuggets. Buddy Hield hasn't really said anything, certainly that I've seen. You know, he wanted to be out of there in the summer. He was liking tweets that were saying getting traded to Philadelphia 76ers, but right. He's been good. It sort of has been like a quiet season there in Sacramento. Now this, you've got someone's dad coming out there, LaVar Ball-like almost, and just saying, trade my son. But again, your son hasn't done enough yet to warrant that sort of discussion. In that article, Jason Jones there talking about a game as well where Rashawn Holmes basically finished the game, mm-hmm. and Bagley wasn't happy with that. But again, coaches on the fly make decisions like that. You can't take that as a knock. It's just like sometimes that's just the way it goes, especially when you're Bagley, who hasn't just gone out there and lit it up for his team at any point to warrant that sort of like, oh, I can't believe you, my son didn't get out there and play. So I hope they can sort this out because I too, coming into the season, like, I think if the Kings can keep the car on the road, they can make a push. And they started well, but already we're sort of seeing this chaos and this drama, and that just never ends well in Sacramento.
Yeah. Trey, is Steve Kirby happy with the touches you're getting here on the podcast?
Dad Kerbs, me dad bags. I would love for my dad to be tweeting. I'm not getting enough mic time here on the classics. But I imagine that my dad would say, look at what Skeets is doing, man. Skeets is putting up stats out there. That's what Marvin Bagley's dad should be saying to Marvin Bagley. Look at Rashawn Holmes. He's shooting 66% from the field. Marvin Bagley, he's shooting 37% from the field. That's pretty tough to do when you're almost 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
The guy's one of the fastest bigs in the league. He should be playing like Rashawn Holmes. He should be flying to the hoop. He should be just catching alley-oops and lobs. And like, he should be a rim runner. He wants to be Dirk Nowitzki. He wants to be Chris Bosh. He wants to be somebody who faces up and gets baskets that way. It's easier to get baskets when you just dunk. And then when you play defense on the other end, I think that Rashawn Holmes has simply been better for the Kings. Like, I would like the bag of beans to be out there as well, getting buckets and playing in the fourth quarters. He should be playing. I totally agree with his dad. You want to play the guys who are supposedly the future of your franchise, but you got to give them a reason to be on the court. Yeah. Bagley has not done that yet.
Yeah, he has not really earned it to be closing some of these games. That's spot on. This isn't the first time, too, that Bags number two has taken to Twitter and had some things to say about the Kings organization. This is dating back to like Jaeger being there and stuff like that. He really is. I saw someone say he's like LeVar Ball without the publicity. The way he's obviously stands up for his kids. That's great, but sort of putting him in a tough spot there. Marvin Bagley II. It's always weird to me when there's an older man that is the junior.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a strange thing to wrap my head around. But I know JD's like that. JD's like the fourth or fifth Terrence going, so I don't know. Anyway.
Skeets, you did retweet a link from The Athletic this weekend that had an incredible story about this whole situation with Marvin Bagley and the Kings, written by Jason Jones. Subscribe at theathletic.com/nodunks. The best part is that former Kings coach Dave Yeager apparently misspoke and referred to Marvin Bagley III as Motown legend Marvin Gaye in a game at Detroit. So what happened here? That right there is a hilarious sentence. I imagine it's during the game and he says, "Hey, Marvin, what's going on? I'm getting the game." So he comes and says, "Hey, I'm Marvin Bagley. I'm not Marvin Bagley. I'm not Marvin Gaye." So apparently then Marvin Bagley Jr., Dad Bags, started calling Dave Yeager Dave Yogurt. Which I'm sorry is very funny.
I think that
Dad Bags wins this one here.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. I did tweet that out because I read that paragraph. I was like, what the hell is going on here? The first part's incredible. That Marvin Bagley was referred to as Marvin Gaye in Detroit. And then the Dave Yogurt takes to the next level.
Dave Yogurt.
Have you seen that Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry David's talked to Ben Stiller about yoga and yogurt? They're saying they're both healthy things, you know, yoga, yogurt. Is that where it came from? Maybe that's the thing with Marvin Bagley. He thought Dave Yeager was being nice by calling him yogurt.
That's funny you say the Ben Stiller, because my buddy Grish reminded me the other night that, you know, right before COVID took off, I flew up to New York for the weekend to hang with him there. We went to a Knicks game, and while we were coming out of the Garden, I had a couple pops in me, but as we're coming out of the Garden, we're by, I guess, like the celebrity entrance, and I saw a man. I go, "Oh, hey, Jerry Seinfeld." It was Ben Stiller.
What?
I think I was thinking of his dad. And like, I didn't like run up. I just like, and he heard me. I pointed right at him. "Hey, Jerry Seinfeld." And he's like, Grish is like, "That's Ben Stiller." Oh, yeah. Okay.
See, at least Marvin Gaye, you know, to Marvin Bagley is close. I mean, you know, Jerry Seinfeld to Ben Stiller is not even the same
again,
name.
Well, I was thinking of his dad, right? Being inside. Right, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's where my brain was malfunctioning again. A couple pops were had there. All right, Lee, let's keep it going here. Loser of the weekend for you.
Yeah, well, I'm going with a team that's just quietly lost four in a row. It's the San Antonio Spurs, and more specifically for last night's loss to the Utah Jazz. They were in San Antonio, and the Jazz absolutely lit up the Spurs, especially from downtown, 21 of 41. And I dug a little deeper into this because I had noticed teams seem to be shooting the ball well, and they are shooting the ball from deep very well against the San Antonio Spurs. They give up the third worst percentage from downtown. And no LaMarcus Aldridge there last night for the Spurs, I'll say that. But we know defensively that's not LaMarcus's strength there. But the Spurs had a couple of nice wins to start the season against the Grizzlies and the Raptors. It looked like, oh, maybe this, you know, young team, they're going to get back in the playoffs. And now they've lost a couple to the Lakers, I will say that. But last night, Bogdanović again looking beautiful out there on the court, shooting the ball spectacularly, hit 6 or 7. And it just felt like the Jazz basically decided we're either going to shoot a three or we're just going to walk into the paint and score easily. The Spurs gave up 130 points so easily last night. They've got some concerns there. They've really got some concerns, I think. And again, it's early in the season. We know all that. But just the way that the Spurs kind of hang their hat is on the defensive end, where they just make it hard for teams to score. But right now, they're not doing that. In those two Lakers losses, again, the Lakers were kind of going at half speed. You know, they weren't really going full speed. And they scored easily as well. So I just wonder what's going to happen here with San Antonio, because I think they've got some good young players there. And again, they're obviously in that sort of a rebuilding phase here. But I wonder if, you know, DeRozan and Aldridge will both be there by the season's end. Because I sort of think they're both at a different stage. They're like, listen, especially DeRozan, he's like, I need to be on a contender. Aldridge the same. What's their trade value? I haven't worked the trade machine just yet. I might get one of them to the Blazers, but they've both got big contracts. But that's really the question. That's really why I brought it up. It's like San Antonio, I think, is clearly at a stage now where they're looking to the future, and those two players, as good as they have been, and they're, you know, great players, really not a part of it. So what does San Antonio do there? There was some talk that DeRozan was going to get traded in the summer there, or the, you know, whatever that offseason was. It never eventuated. But I wonder if they start badly and they continue to be playing badly, if talks will pick up a little bit more traction. Because I think he's got some value. I definitely think DeRozan and Aldridge has value out there. Right. It's just exactly who and where and for what.
No surprise, the Spurs sort of going under the radar. I'm glad you brought them up there. Because I feel like with trade chatter, I don't know, maybe this is because I'm a Raptors fan, but their rough start, you see a lot of talk of like, oh, would they trade Lowry, obviously, to a contender if this season continued to go the way it's going? Would you, you know, look to trade Siakam? And I know Harden's name's been linked to them. But the Spurs, you're right. I mean, that's a team with two great vets. I mean, these guys are still good players. Oh, DeRozan is still really, really solid. Aldridge, when healthy, of course, can be a problem in a playoff series. We've seen that before. So, yeah, will San Antonio look to ship one or both of those guys? Not easy because of contracts, but can be done. You can trade anybody, of course, in this league. So, yeah, something to watch. Good one, San Antonio there.
And this is the year that it might actually happen. The Spurs are famous for never making in-season trades, right? But you look at their salary cap, DeRozan, Aldridge, Rudy Gay, even Patty Mills coming off the books for next season. It's a youth movement in San Antonio. Yep. It's just a matter of, will the Spurs actually decide, we're bad this year and we're going to be bad? Maybe they should. There aren't a whole bunch of teams that are actively shooting for the number one pick. If it's a slow start to the season and it continues for the Spurs, why not actually make a move here? Maybe you can get a first round pick for either DeRozan or Aldridge. Somebody will take their deal for a half a season, right? Like, they're both players who have shown that they can show up in some playoff series. DeRozan will be good as a fourth option. Aldridge will be a great second big or starting supplemental big to bring in. But I don't know. It feels like the DeMar DeRozan showcase at the beginning of every season. You know, he comes out, he shoots threes, he passes the ball, he looks like a totally different player. Then he falls back into line of being DeMar DeRozan. But now's the time. Somebody pick him up.
Yeah. All right, Trey. A couple mini ones here for before we move to winners of the weekend. Who else you got on the loser list?
Just a little mini loser here to the Brooklyn Nets. I'm not concerned a kiss about them yet, but they lost two over the weekend. They got smashed by the Hawks in a revenge game. Yeah. Remember, we had the 300-point early in the week. Then we had John Collins just crushing one on top of Jared Allen in a big win by the Hawks. And then the Nets barely lost to the Wizards yesterday. They had two shots at the game winner. Kyrie had a good look. Kevin Durant had a good look. Those could have easily been wins for the Nets, but kind of under the radar. They've lost 4 of 5 since Spencer Dinwiddie got out. That went out. They've yet to commit to defense, and it just kind of feels like Steve Nash is actually going to have to do a little bit of coaching right now, figuring out the right rotations, way to get defense on the floor, way to get guys to commit to defense to actually playing on both ends of the court, because the Nets haven't tried to stop anybody yet. They've been trying to outscore teams, and it worked during the first week of the season. It worked that first game against the Hawks, but it's not going to work every single night. That being said, if Kevin Durant makes 2 12-footers, the Nets are really good still, right? Yeah. Like, if Kevin Durant hits a jumper he had against the Hawks, or maybe it was against the
Hornets.
Hornets, exactly. Yeah, right over Biombo. He missed that one. He had this one against the Wizards. If those go down, those are easy Kevin Durant shots, all things considered. We're talking differently, but it's been a weird start for the Nets. You know, they look great the first week of the season. Second week, not so much.
Yeah. Nash made an interesting decision to go with Jeff Green at the 5 last night down the stretch there, Lili. Like, go small. And it sort of backfired. They gave up a huge offensive rebound late, the one that eventually led to Beal finding Bryant, who had a great game inside. I'm just saying, maybe a little surprising that Jared Allen isn't out there in that situation, because I get the reasoning is, you know, spread the floor, more room for KD and Kyrie to operate, but the counter is like, do those guys need, you know, Jeff Green in the corner to really get it done? Or maybe keep your talented big center in there for a little defensive backbone. And, oh, yeah, he can also contribute inside and on the boards. I think maybe, obviously, played that one wrong if I'm taking a shot at my boy Steve Nash. Right?
Well, it feels to me, though, watching the Nets, when you have Kyrie and Kevin Durant out there, they just kind of think, like, we can win this game anytime, because these two guys can both win it for us. Like, against the Wizards as well, it's like they don't know how to close out games. They're going to botch it at the end, and they nearly did. This was actually a hilariously fun game to watch. I really enjoyed it, because the Wizards did everything possible to try to give it back to the Nets. You know, Westbrook took that awful shot from 30 feet out with about 40 seconds to go. It clunked off by a mile, and he just stood there going, wasn't that a beautiful shot?
Oh.
While Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrut went down the other end and scored. And then in that fourth quarter, Westbrook had a couple of just awful plays. Like, he hit some shots, but he also, like, backed in and threw the ball away. And it was just terrible at the end. And then even the Wizards, to get the win, or to get themselves in front there. Beal missed the shot and they got a lucky offensive rebound. Then he drove inside and I think it was Hachimura who dunked it for them. So this was basically a game that the Nets, like, you just think they are just going to win this on a Kevin Durant buzzer beater or a Kyrie Irving buzzer beater, but it just didn't drop for them. But a fun game. But yeah, I just sort of feel with the Nets, they don't lock in defensively because they just feel they don't have to when you have that much offensive weaponry going forward. And you mentioned that game there against the Hornets. They also miss that one. But we just know it's a matter of time before Durant hits those shots and Kyrie hits them and the Nets pull those victories out and they get the win. But it didn't fall for them last night.
That said, you got to add some defense to eventually win a title.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Long term, the Nets do have to get much better because the Hawks scored easily against them on whatever night that was, Friday night. That was another great game, two great games between those two teams. And then you saw the Hawks the night later really struggled to score at home against, I can't remember who it was, but they lost that game.
Trying to keep track of this. Yeah,
but my point being exactly that like the Hawks scored so easily against Brooklyn. Yeah. And Brooklyn, you know, that was another fun game, another no defense game. But yes, if you are a legit title contender, you have to at least play a better D than the Nets are playing right now.
Yeah, I'll give a loser of the weekend to the Suns. I'll make this quick. And here's why. You sort of said it there, Lee. There was a lot of great basketball on yesterday, specifically, all weekend long. And, you know, we didn't have a show on Friday, so it's sort of a long weekend for us, NBA-wise. But on Sunday, I was excited, when I'm looking at the schedule, for Clippers-Suns. You know, a bit of a later game, but not a stupid late start for us East Coasters. It was starting at 8 o'clock. So I was excited all day. I was like, all right, this is going to be good. But I was finishing up the Wizards-Nets game. That was great down the stretch. I was watching LeBron take over against the Grizzlies, who were rocking the Vancouver throwbacks on their old court. He just completely took over, LeBron. And so I'm watching these, and then by the time I got done those, I'm like, all right, here we go. Suns Clippers. You know, it'll be first half. It was 60-29 Clippers. God damn it, Suns. Like, I was so excited. But what happens? Because it's the NBA. Phoenix starts chipping away. In the fourth quarter, the Suns pulled within a point, I think, with about 10 minutes to go. I mean, a ton of time. Cameron Johnson hit a three. And so, of course, I'm invested in this game, but I knew it. I was like, you're going to come all the way back, basically, and still lose the game. And that's what ended up happening. Now, it was very entertaining because we had Devin Booker and Paul George going at it. Feisty.
Devin Booker, though, looks like a 12-year-old kid, though, talking to Paul George out there. That was a great, fourth quarter.
It was
the same. Because I saw that score early. I thought, oh, wow, they're getting hammered. And then it was like a couple of possession game. You tune in and Chris Paul, oh, he copped one too from Paul George there.
Yeah.
I thought that we weren't going to see him again, but he did come back out there. He got one right in the hibbets there. But yeah, the Suns had chances in this game. They could have, a 31-point comeback.
Yeah.
Incredible.
We would have been leading with the Clippers, possibly. Well, I know Steph did his thing, but yeah. That would have been bad, but it was fun.
If they blow another 3-1 lead.
Right. But it got juicy. I was still upset with the Suns because I was suddenly deflated when I saw the score, but I mean, we're getting some crazy scores here without the fans and maybe like the less travel and the comebacks are always in play in today's NBA with the way teams can shoot the three. Because the Clippers couldn't miss from three either early in the game, but they were on fire. But Paul George, I mean, I know a lot of people hate him, but when he's going, oh man, is he hilarious. Because he just takes like these off-balance threes and feels like he can get by anybody. He's got that quick first step. So he was dominant because Kawhi had a super quiet game. And he talked about it after,
That mid-ranger for Kawhi wasn't falling in that fourth quarter. So I wonder if the mask is bothering him a little bit. I don't know. Maybe it's an excuse for him. But it seemed a little bit steamy around the mouth and around the face. I just wonder if it's like, you know, when you're wearing a mask, especially for me as a glasses wearer, I'm always steaming up my glasses. I wonder if that's a problem with him. But Eddie Johnson on the broadcast there, he was kind of saying, Paul George, you don't need to get into these like drawing contests right now. You're cooking right now. He was on fire last night. Just go out there and burn Devin Booker, because Devin Booker is a good offensive player, but defensively, you know, Paul George was doing whatever he wanted, but he was almost like getting caught up in that and not focusing on just getting the win and securing it for his team. They did in the end, but a little closer than it should have been for the Clippers.
Yeah. Anything to add to the Clips Suns there, Trey?
I thought the Suns were gonna end up as winners of the weekend. They almost pulled off the comeback, and yep. I thought the game against the Nuggets was awesome because you got the full Chris Paul experience when he hits the clutch jumper kind of in the post over Nikola Jokic, and then one of his teammates accidentally steps on his shoe as he's celebrating, and Chris Paul turns around, he's yelling right out, "Hey, don't step on my shoe, I'm trying to play basketball out here." I thought that was great. And if they would have been able to pull off the comeback last night, Skeets, we would have been talking about the Raptors as one of the losers of the weekend. That's right. What everybody in the stream team saying. The Suns, excuse me, Skeets?
Wow,
excuse
it was more, me? Yeah, the Raptors, I mean, yeah, they've been the loser of the season so far. Let's be honest here. It's not good. It's not good. And they keep having leads in these games and cannot close it out as they lost another one to the Pelicans over the week. It's just like weird when you come Monday and you're talking about a game on like, I don't know, Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
If you're going to lose in the NBA, lose big on Friday night if you can, or even Saturday, because we're less likely to really do a deep dive on it. That's the
right.
truth.
Take a big dump on a Friday, the Friday news dump.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But yeah, I'm not happy about the Raps. You guys know that. You know, I need to stick in the knife and twist it. Jesus.
The Bulls were terrible for a week. Now the Raptors are terrible.
Yeah.
By the end of the season, I think it's going to even out for you, buddy.
All right, great. Well, we'll get to NBA weekend winners, but first, a quick word from our sponsors, Lee.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right, NBA weekend winners, Trey, get us started. Who gets the dub?
Oh, Skeets, we're really stretching the definition of winners here. We're going back to last year for this winner. John Wall made his return Thursday after 2 years off. Looked good in a Rockets win. He went for 22, 9, and 6. He only shot 8 for 20. His first basket was a dunk, the classic John Wall lefty. Didn't quite have the explosion we're used to from John Wall, but he got it out there, and he honestly looked really good in the Rockets' baby blue uniforms. I will say, you say the Grizzlies ones show sweat. Wow. You're going to look sweaty wearing these baby blue Rockets jerseys, but Wall was again good on Saturday, playing this time without James Harden. John Wall went for 28, 6, and 4. He had 3 steals, 2 blocks, another win for the Rockets. He was flying around out there. He was playing defense. He was so good that somebody actually compared him to Michael Jordan on the Wizards. saying that Tim McMahon said that John Wall, a total of 50 points in his first 2 games after a 2-year layoff. The last player to do that per Elias? The Wizards, Michael Jordan in 2001. That's crazy. I didn't even know that ever happened. But Wall has been good. The guy is flying around out there. He has missed 2 years with a variety of injuries, but he looks like he's moving pretty well. And he looks like a really nice fit next to Christian Wood, who has still been balling for the Rockets. He is like an ideal big to play next to James Harden and to play next to John Wall. Who knows how that'll work if those 3 guys are around for the entire season? It could work out all right. We've seen Chris Paul and James Harden work out pretty well, having 2 ball handlers outside with a pick and roll threat. It was Clint Capella back in the Chris Paul days, but you got Christian Wood out there now. He's scoring, he's rebounding, he's dunking everything. I liked what I saw from the Rockets this weekend. John Wall, surprisingly good in his return.
Absolutely. Go ahead, Elise.
Yeah, no, I was going to say the same thing, especially that Saturday night game, because the first one, okay, he was getting a little bit of rust out of his system there. But the second one, he honestly couldn't tell he had missed 2 years with really bad knee and leg injuries there. He was moving around very, very well. And the shot was looking quite decent as well, that little mid-ranger he had there. So right now, the prospects for the Rockets are much better than they were a week or so ago before we'd even seen him and DeMarcus out there. Now, DeMarcus hasn't looked as good by any means, but certainly if this is the John Wall the Rockets are going to get this season, then I just think things are completely different for them, their outlook and their possibility.
And a potential all-star looking all-star in Christian Wood, too.
Christian Wood's kind of like Hassan Whiteside, who's just shooting threes out there. You know, he's bounced around a few teams, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, where did this guy come from? Yeah. You know, he's incredible. Yeah. But and now it is fascinating what they do there with James Harden, because if he stays and Walls are giving you this and this other, you know, these other guys are contributing – it's just, you know, they're not going to win the championship, of course, but they're back
that
in
that. Would be amazing.
They're back in the mix of just like, hey, they're you know, top five team maybe in the Western Conference. Yeah. Again, like how much John Wall will be able to play, and will he sit in back-to-backs going forward? Who knows? Will he sort of come back to the mean a little bit? But right now, his speed is maybe not quite what it was, but he's moving laterally as well, which is very, very good. He's shooting, and he just looks like a guy who's like, man, I miss playing basketball. Yeah. I just want to get out there and play as hard as I can. So, very, very good weekend for the Rockets and for John Wall.
He also said, John Wall did, quote, I feel like I'm the best shot-blocking point guard of all time. Which is like, just like, first off, you just played two games for the first time in 2 years. Like, okay. I think he's got three blocks in the two games. You know, good. At the point guard position. But I was caught off guard by that because I wasn't sure how to react. I'm like, hold on, is he? Because, like, Dwayne Wade is the greatest shot-blocking guard of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hands down. You can't convince me otherwise, but I never considered Dwayne Wade a point guard. I'm sure, he played point guard early on in his career, blah, 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 but he's not. So is it John Wall? And then if it's not, who else is it?
Like, I mean, young John Wall, I remember, rookie and sort of second season John Wall, did get a lot of blocks, but I don't, you know, don't remember sort of too many after that.
Well, here's the thing, Lee. I fired up Basketball Reference, the database, because I was curious. So I just checked to see guards, because you can select guards, totaled over 80 blocks in a season. I just picked 80 because I was like, you know, close to one a game, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe you're missing games. So D. Wade, because he obviously is considered a guard, he did it four seasons, 80 blocks total.
Right.
With Miami, he did it all four times with Miami. 106 blocks in one of the seasons in 08-09 in 79 games played. That's really good. The only other guard from Basketball References database is Hall of Famer Dennis Johnson, who did it twice for the Sonics in the late 70s. And he, again, I think you considered a point guard, also a shooting guard. It's always tough, but he was, you know, not a big, big guard. So, you know, Dennis Johnson did it numbers-wise. So John Wall never did it. I don't even know John Wall's ever had like 60 blocks in a season. But anyway, that's just a fascinating thing for him to say.
Yeah.
And I was like, it made me fire up Basketball Reference. So good on you, John Wall. Drew Holiday is actually... I remember one year he had a really good blocking year at the point guard position.
What was Jordan's most blocks? Because
Jordan, I mean...
He must have... You figure he got close. I mean, he's had some highlight reel blocks in his career, but maybe he didn't get that many. I'm not sure. Gerald Wallace was another good one. I don't know
Jared
what position.
Gerald Wallace was not
I think
a point
the point guard is no, I know. Exactly why John Wall slid that in there.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to think of other guards who got a lot of blocks and then sort of seeing if you can, you know, finagle it to make it sort of someone.
The best I can do, I think, is honestly Dennis Johnson as my counter, and then maybe Drew Holiday, but I think even that's a bit of a reach.
A lot of people in the stream team are saying Nate Robinson because he blocked Yao and Shaq.
Okay, memorable block.
Which is pretty
block.
Impressive for a small guy.
Yeah.
Well, he blocked LeBron too. Remember, there's that block Nate Robinson got on LeBron when Nate
Good
was
point,
at
yeah.
the Bulls? Was Nate on the Bulls?
Oh, I don't remember that one. I'll have to look that one up
it's
on the
It's like
YouTube
LeBron
machine.
Goes up with the left hand and he comes in and wipes it.
Okay, Nate Robinson for the most memorable blocks by a point guard. Sorry, John Wall. You've been pushed out of that spot. Lee, let's keep it going here. Winner of the weekend.
Well, so this one is another team that's kind of slid under the radar, but they're the best team in the East right now. Only one loss, and that was to my Cleveland Cavaliers, the Philadelphia 76ers. I will just say, though, pretty easy schedule so far, but... What has impressed me about them so far is their offense has gotten certainly looks a little better than it did last year. Now, the bar was very low for last season because it looked awful. It was just so congested in there. And the Doc Rivers effect, I think, is you're just seeing it. Now, again, they beat the Hornets. So, you know, that's a team they should beat. But it just feels that, like, you know, we thought when Doc comes in, maybe he'll get something out of Tobias Harris. He's done that so far. It's all very early. But... you can just sort of see that it just seems a little bit smoother out there. And I think that's very, very important here for Philadelphia. They need to get off to a good start. They need to get out there and get these wins, you know, and pile them up early if they can. Because there are people like me who doubt whether or not they are a legit team going down the stretch, because I just don't feel that that offense is going to work. But from what I've seen so far, it just looks like, okay, he's just tweaked a few things here. I mean, Joel Embiid, again, I think is looking good. The game has slowed down a little bit for him. And him and Simmons don't seem to be just on top of each other so far. Simmons has made some nice passes from sort of in the low post there, and he's doing things that I think make it a better, a more enjoyable watch to see Philadelphia out there right now. So, you know, they get the wins, they're playing better. Good early signs here for Philadelphia, but they've also had a very, very easy schedule. So it's a little hard to take too much out of it.
Yeah.
But again, teams like this coming into the season with some question marks, if they can answer those ones early against teams they should beat, I think that's a good sign.
Tobias Harris had one of the sneaky good dunks from the NBA weekend too. So I know we said the John Collins one, that was huge. That's probably the dunk of the weekend, but Tobias was catching some bodies there too. It's always surprising when Tobias Harris sort of dunks too. It's sort of Jeff Greenish to me. It's like, whoa. But, you do sort of have that in your bag, but we don't see it all that often. But it's always fun when you throw one down.
Yeah.
I'll go next. Celtics. Well, specifically, I could go Jaylen Brown as winner of the weekend, but I'm going to also go Jason Tatum from what happened on Sunday. He had 24 points, 12 assists for Boston in the sort of revenge win over Detroit. Jaylen Brown is on fire too, so I want to point that out for all the Beantown boys and gals out there. He can't miss right now. But Tatum, superstar Tatum, down the stretch. Final minute of this game versus Detroit on Sunday. This was the first game, so I was really zeroed in because there's nothing else going on and I don't care about football. Though congrats to your Bears, Trey, I should say. I know you're
Oh, what a Sunday for the Bears.
Yeah.
To lose a game to the hated Green Bay Packers and still make the playoffs. It doesn't matter.
I'm very excited. I think you're playing the Saints, right? You got the Saints in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so anyway, Tatum on Sunday afternoon, 34 seconds left. He sets up Jalen's three. To give the Celtics the lead. Huge. You know, just a playmaking. It is setting up guys and go to the guy that's on fire. You can't miss Jaylen Brown right now. Then he blocks Derrick Rose's driving layup attempt. Great D there. Totally clean. And then 3 seconds to go, let's call it that, drops Blake Griffin. You know, they get the switch, sort of shakes him. Blake stumbles, pull-up jumper, just total control, puts the Celtics up two. And he's not done. You know, Blake is going to get a bit of a deep heave from three to try and win this thing at the buzzer. But Tatum sort of steals slash blocks it, stalks it, if you will, where he sort of hits it on the way up, whatever I think it was officially called a block, but prevents him from getting it up. And it was clean and just closed out the game. I mean, that's what you want. That's the superstar. Hit the big shots, set up guys, and play some defense if you can as well. And he did it twice. So, nice little bounce back from the Celtics, who have not, I've not blown anyone away here early in the season. I think somebody has said they're like surviving, not thriving.
Mm.
But
closing games though.
With what those two are doing, especially Tatum and Brown, that's a nice bounce back from, again, the loss where they lost on Friday to the Pistons, where they couldn't score down the stretch. They missed their final 10 shots. I mean, we would have probably had the Celtics, I think, as a loser of the weekend if they dropped both of those games to Detroit. And instead, Tatum says, no, not on my watch. We're going to win this. I thought that was
especially
impressive.
Yeah, I mean, if Tatum fouls Blake on that shot and maybe loses the game, but he got it just so clean. He just like sort of poked it.
Yeah.
That's the perfect way to play. He didn't go for a big like hack or anything like that. He just sort of put his hand there and Blake almost like pushed the ball into his hand.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you screw that up and Blake goes to the free throw line and knocks him down and they lose the game, then it's like, you know, Tatum's the GOAT for the other reason for being called a GOAT, you know? But he's Tatum and Brown right now, it's incredible combination they got there. And both of them just seem to be able to really make clutch plays for the Celtics.
You got to love the in-season growth, too. It feels like we're already seeing Jason Tatum improve over the course of a couple of weeks, right? The first week, he had two game-winning shot attempts. One was a bank-in step-back three. One was a missed step-back three. This time, he's creating for a teammate, getting a wide-open three for Jaylen Brown on a night when Jason Tatum had a career-high 12 assists. You'll love to see the upgrade in playmaking. And then this time, the jumper wasn't a step-back three. He got to a little closer, hit what, maybe a 20-footer for the pull-up to ice things. That was really nice. Both Celtics and even Marcus Smart, I would say, are filling in perfectly for Kemba Walker right now. Marcus Smart's not going crazy with the shot attempts. He's playing a lot more in control right now as a point guard. Tatum is handling some playmaking. Jaylen Brown is handling some scoring honestly, just getting the ball and going and scoring, which is something that isn't, sometimes he can be more of a finisher than a creator. And I think he's been a great creator to start the season so far. So yeah, it's going to be on Kemba to see how he fits in with this team, the way they're playing once he finally comes back.
Absolutely. All right, Lee, back to you. What do you got?
Well, I'm going with my Wizards for getting that win last night. I mean, we've already sort of talked about a lot there. With
how many teams do you have? I need to keep track. You're wearing a Warriors jersey.
Well, Bradley
you said
Beal.
My Cavs. Now you said my Wizards.
Yeah, Bradley Beal.
Long-time Knicks fan, of course.
Yeah, long-time Knicks fan.
Oh, long-time Knicks fan, yeah. But Beal, you know, because talking about that game again last night, Westbrook took that shot with about 6 seconds to go, 30-foot out, and just admired it while Luau Cabarrú got the layup, right?
Yeah.
On the next couple of possessions, Westbrook, whether it was by design or not, was basically out to the away from the play. And Beal was just like, I'm not giving you the ball, man. I'm just going to do it myself. And Beal went into create mode. He missed that shot, got the rebound. And then he went back inside and you thought, oh, well, he's going to try to score this ball here. Instead, made a beautiful pass to Achimura, who dunked it. And the Wizards closed out the game. I mean, they're a funny team, Washington, because I just don't think they're very good at all. But they somehow pulled out the victory last night when you just sort of think that they would have lost it because of the offensive power of the Brooklyn Nets. And again, that like Westbrook, you know, he works hard, of course. You know, he's a competitor, but he still just takes some bad shots, you know, some bad shots. He's not a good three-point shooter. And this one, again, 6 seconds to go on the clock. That's not like clock running out. You've got time to drive, to get a little bit closer, to make some other play. But instead to shoot it and then to double down on that awful shot by just standing there admiring it was just terrible. So the Nets, the Wizards somehow pulled off that victory last night, and congratulations to them because they need absolutely any they can get. They've got two now on the season, two in a row.
Yeah.
But the Wizards are back.
The Wizards are back. You love to bury Westbrook any chance you can get, but I will say there is that one camera angle where Westbrook shoots the three and is just holding the pose for whatever reason, despite missing the damn shot.
Well, his
and
man
then TLC
is running back.
Is gone. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, you know, I love his competitiveness. There's no question that I love the way that he fights and he competes, but I just get so frustrated how he still gets sucked into taking just terrible shots like that. And again, like that, to not have the discipline or the awareness to be like, oh, shit. That's off. I got to get back on defense here. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, it just sends a message. And I think you could see that on the next possessions where Beal was like, I'm this side of the court. You stay over there. We're not going to you. Or I'll just live with it. And I always love watching Bradley Beal. I mean, he's still got the most beautiful shot in the game. So, you know, I stand. I stand for everyone, you know. By the way, I remember that game, the Hawks and the Cavs on Saturday. No, it was the Cavs down here in the Fortress. That wasn't the most fun game. That was a bit of an ugly game, but the Hawks just could not score.
Right.
But Colin Sexton, MIP? Who knows?
Well, goodness gracious. Wow, what about Jeremy Grant? MIP?
Yeah.
Let's throw his name in there. What about this guy?
Okay, so
you're a Knicks fan, you're a Cavs fan, you're a Hawks fan, you're a Warriors fan, you're a Wizards fan. We've got at least five teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to be tough come play-in tournament time. It's going to be all your favorite teams playing against each other. Who are you going to cheer for?
Oh, man, I just have to wait. It's probably going to be the 10th and the 9th team. You know, you've got to go for the underdog. You've got to pull for them.
They'll probably be the Raptors. Trey, a mini winner of the weekend?
A mini winner. Somebody call Amari Stoudemire. The Knicks are back, baby. They went 3-1 from Sunday to Saturday. The big win was Saturday. Against the Pacers. It moves the Knicks to 3-3. 500 for the first time after six games. For the first time since 2017. Julius Randle joins Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic as the only players to be leading their teams in points, rebounds, and assists. The Knicks, they're winning games right now. I'm not totally sure how they're doing it. Austin Rivers was making huge play after huge play down the stretch against the Pacers. Tommy Tibbs working that magic along the Knicks sideline. I don't know how long it's going to last, but we got to give the Knicks, Lee's Knicks, a winner while they're actually winning. They could easily be the worst team in the league. It seemed like they might be after the first week of the season, but they put things together. They're playing hard out there, and they're getting contributions from people you wouldn't expect. Nerlens Noel, also a pretty solid game. So shout out to Nerlens Noel and Austin Rivers, your Knicks saviors.
Lee, were you one of these Knicks fans taking to Twitter saying, hey, look at the standings. Knicks half a game up on the Nets. Suck it.
Yeah, I think it was Network who tweeted, Knicks top four or something like that it was. Because I remember when we had Network on the show here and he was like, because he thought at that point they were going to get Westbrook and he would talk himself into saying maybe Westbrook can help this team. Well, instead, you know, it's Thibodeau. It's the Thibodeau effect there. They've improved. But Julius Randle, MIP. He's having a great season.
Oh, you really want to get this conversation started?
You know
what,
though? It feels, I don't know if it's maybe because it is this season, things are so different, you know, no real off season and you know, coming into it, it's been different. But it just feels like anybody can win any given night. Yes. Anyone can go on a streak, which is great. That is very good for the NBA because it's like, it's fun to watch these teams that we kind of just dismiss and write off actually sort of, you know, playing and having fun. And maybe it's not different. Maybe that's sort of the start of every season. But it just feels to me that when you tune in right now, you're like, oh, this team's kind of fun to watch. I don't mind watching them, you know?
Yeah, well, that transitions into my final winner of the weekend quite nicely, actually, Lee, because I'm giving a winner of the weekend to the Jokers, plural. All right, first off, the Joker, Jokic. He's averaging 22, 11, and 13 while shooting 62% from the floor, 44% from three, and 82% from the line. The national media will start taking notice of this as soon as Denver strings some wins together here because, you know, they haven't got off to a great start, but they got a good one over the Wolves last night. Pretty dominant victory there, but that's just nuts. I mean, those are crazy, crazy numbers right from the jump. But I say Jokers because I'm talking about the Joker also from The Dark Knight, who said, introduce a little anarchy, upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos, Lee. I'm an agent of chaos. No, you know the thing about chaos? It's fair. And I say that because you brought it up, Lee. The standings are nuts right now. It's chaotic. And the Joker, that one, rest in peace, Heath Ledger, from The Dark Knight, is loving this because it's wild what's going on right now when you look, especially at the Eastern Conference, where you said Philly's 5-1 at the top. Okay. But then it's the Magic, the Pacers, the Cavs, and the Hawks. In 2, 3, 4, 5 spot at all 4-2. You got the Knicks would be in the playoffs at 3-3. They're tied with the Bucks, who would be your 8th seed. I mean, it's just mental right now. The West is, you know, also just, it's a classic West where it's just a logjam. It feels like every team is either 4-2, 3-3, or 2-4. It is fun early on. And I'm with you, Lee. I think it is a little different than years prior, at least, that I can remember, of a start where it's just like, right now, it does feel like so many teams can at least compete on any given night. And I don't know what this like little baseball series effect it's having, if any, on the whole thing. But there's a lot of good talent, I guess, in this league, too. And the three ball, obviously, is a great equalizer. And it's crazy right now. I mean, you just see the scores. You're like, what's going on? Why is that team up 30? That team should be down 30. And it's just mental.
I just find, you know, when there's often multiple games starting at around the same time, you know, sometimes I'll just like in past, you'd watch a game and you sort of just notice the other score. But now I'm sort of finding I'm dipping into these other games just a little bit more and being like, I'm enjoying watching this team, you know? Yeah. And again, the Nets and the Wizards last night is a good example because I was like, the Nets will win this by 40, you know? But it wasn't like that. It was actually like, oh, there's some chaos out there. You're right, about the Joker. Like, it just doesn't feel like we have the same sort of confirmed storylines going in right now. It feels like, oh, yeah, there's some teams out there that can really compete when they play hard and when they, in the past, we haven't seen that. So maybe it's just all this whole, you know, the season came back late and, you know, some of these teams haven't played for 9 months, really competitive basketball. But we're seeing some fun stuff. So it's very, very good for the league, I think, to have that feeling at least where there's a little bit more parity and a little bit more competition in the conferences.
I do think the baseball factor kind of plays into things. You look at the Hawks, they had this game against the Nets early in the week. They lose, 145 to 141. They're probably like, oh, we could have won that game. Normally, you're not getting another chance to beat that same team for a couple of weeks, probably. Sure. This time, it's a few days. So you're saying, okay, here's what we got to do to win. We just played this team. Let's do it. And they went out and they did it. I think that definitely factors in the familiarity, seeing the same teams, the same players over and over. But you mentioned the Jokers. Skeets, gotta ask JD, hate to put you on the spot here. Who's the best Joker? What you got? Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, Joaquin Phoenix, Jared Leto.
Isn't there a new one coming too, or is that the Riddler?
Jared Leto is the latest, and I think he is the current. Is he not?
Well, there's a new Batman coming out, right?
Right, but I think that Jared is the guy.
Still. Oh, okay.
But I don't know. I don't know. I didn't know. Who knows? The best Joker, and it's not even close, is Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's by miles and miles and miles. And the second would be Jack Nicholson, in my opinion.
All right.
I would have liked to see them be able to kind of hybridize it. Like if Heath Ledger just had that gigantic face thing that Jack Nicholson had on, that was the only thing missing to me, that weird face.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Nolan wanted to put Batman in reality for some reason. So there you go.
I can't believe Cesar Romero got snubbed. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
You're dating
Cesar
yourself, mate. Well.
Caesar is iconic, no doubt. No doubt.
He's incredible, I thought. I showed some clips of Cesar Romero as a joke to my boys. They absolutely loved him. Yeah, oh, loved him. Yeah.
Well, they're 8 and 4? Eight, yeah. And, so the perfect for them.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like it's so funny seeing old Adam West, you know, the sort of, you know, not very masculine in that role to what the Batmans are
now.
How
dare you?
Well, Lee, what's your favorite Batman villain? And you can't say the Joker, let's say.
Oh, you can't say the Joker. Yeah. Well, Catwoman, I guess. Julie Newmar, you know. Now, Michelle Pfeiffer in, what was that one? Batman Returns? Was that Batman Returns?
Yeah, Batman Returns.
Catwoman.
She's great.
Yeah. Really?
Anne Hathaway is the best Catwoman, though. Come on.
Catwoman even a villain?
Kind
well,
of.
Well, she sort of, yeah, she does swing a little bit, doesn't she? She sort of, you know.
Well, I don't know what she does in her off time. Shouldn't jump to conclusions.
But they really
like
ran
that.
Out after the Riddler. And Penguin, I guess it's Joker, Penguin, Riddler, because then they had Egghead in the old day. Two-Face.
Oh, classic. He's on the Mount Rushmore. Poison Ivy.
As you can imagine, I'm a huge fan of Egghead.
I've never even heard of it. Who is Egghead?
I have no idea. Yeah.
Egghead. He was back in the day in the old.
Was he just smart?
In the 60s show. That was, like I say, they just, I used to watch it as a kid, and I remember it was like Joker, 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 Riddler, Penguin, and then it'd just be like, you know, the Mad Hatter, I think, was one as well. You know, but these guys only got like one or two shows because no one really wanted to see
that. Well, can you explain Egghead for a lot of us?
Well, he just had an egg on his head, you know, like that.
Well, was he smart at least?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry for asking.
You know, like, it's like normal, sort of. Like, he's some crazy villain.
He must have been smart, right? Maybe he scrambled something? I don't know.
He loved eggs. Just threw eggs at you.
It was basically me. Was I in the original Batman series?
But yeah, he just didn't. You remember that movie, Eggheads, I think, with...
Dan Aykroyd?
Oh, Coneheads. Yeah, maybe that was it. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Tangent.
Wow, that was a hell of a tangent. I'm glad we go there. All right, so those are our losers and winners of the NBA weekend. Let us know who we missed. I know you guys will in the stream team, or tweet at us at NoDunksInc. We still got the wedgies to show you. Got some news as well. But first, our final break to hear from our sponsors.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Whoa! Mac is back! You ever wish you could have it both ways? I do. Like a zero-calorie cheeseburger or staying up late but not feeling exhausted in the morning. Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But you can have it both ways with Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I've got some polos, some tees, some undies. and I love them. Simple, soft, stylish. In fact, I'm wearing Mack Weldon right now. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. If you told me my silver PK polo was made from 100% cotton, I would 100% believe you. But those antimicrobial silver threads keep me feeling fresher longer. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code NODUNKS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code NODUNKS.
It was announced over the weekend that Hall of Famer Paul Westfall passed away at the age of 70. As a player early in his career, he contributed to the 74 Celtics championship. But most know that Westfall's peak years came as member of the Phoenix Suns. He would make 5 All-Star games, 4 All-NBA teams. And then later, he would have a long coaching career, including leading the Suns to the NBA Finals in 93 in a loss to MJ's Bulls. So sending, of course, our condolences to the Westfall family, his wife Cindy and their entire family. Lee, what are you, a member of Paul Westfall? Were you old enough?
Well, of course, the Phoenix Suns in the 93 series as the coach is what he's what I most remember about him, obviously, because that was when they were down against the Lakers in the first round. They were down 0-2. They lost the first 2 games at home, and he came out and said, "We're going to win this series here." Now, of course, what else is he going to say when they're down 0-2? But they did come back and win that series, and then they went to the finals and obviously came sort of close to beating the Bulls there, but a Phoenix legend and a Phoenix lifer. And you mentioned he won the championship there with Boston, but it wasn't until he went to Phoenix as a player that his career really took off, and he made the finals there with Phoenix as a player as well. In the Hall of Fame, great scorer, a very nice reputation around the league. Everyone speaks highly of him. And sad to lose him. We sort of knew this day was coming probably about 6 months ago, I think, when it was announced he had brain cancer that was terminal. Mm-hmm. So sad for him and his family, but in the basketball world, a very accomplished, loved figure, and he will be dearly missed.
Yeah, to bring up another sort of MJ comparison here on the show, Trey, I saw Justin Kubatko on Twitter. Westfall averaged 20-plus points per game with a 50-plus field goal percentage for 4 straight seasons, and the only other guard in NBA history to do that with a longer streak is Jordan, doing it 5. He was efficient, an efficient scorer, Paul Westfall was.
Yeah, seems to be a great player, but like Lee, I mostly know him from the 1993 Finals, coaching against the Bulls, coaching that awesome Suns team that, to me, was maybe the coolest team the Bulls faced during the dynasty. It's them or the Sonics, to create that team around Charles Barkley to maximize his talents to play a fast, scoring-based style. Those are some teams that would not be outside the norm in the NBA today, and that was, 27 years ago at this point. So Paul Westfall, ahead of his time, no doubt about it. Going to be missed. Cancer continues to suck.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Kerr pointed out, too, this is ahead of my time, but they used to have those horse games back on CBS, like during halftime of the games of the week. And Paul Westfall was like one of the guys always in those horse games, one of the best players in the league in those competitions, because he was really good, apparently, with like both his hands. Had all like these like wild spin shots and stuff like that, too. So Kerr saying, he's a really fun player to watch. So again, sending our best to the Westfall family and the entire NBA community. All right, it was a great weekend for the Wedgies. We set off the top of the show. We got number 2, number 3, and number 4 on the season. Yeah, we had 3 Wedgies this weekend. We're going to show them to you here. On Friday night, it was the Blazers-Warriors, ooh, and it was Nurk, blocking Wiseman's baseline layup. Then on Sunday, had the rare, tip wedgie here, a lot of bodies in there in the Jazz-Spurs game. But then back to the Blazers-Warriors on late Sunday night, Mello.
Ooh.
Sticking the 3-point wedgie. That really, really deep. And he had a good layup. Oh, that's going to be on No Dunks. He knew it. So there you go. And I should say much love to the Blazers broadcaster, Lamar Hurd, who gave us the No Dunks show.
Oh.
On the that's right. He said, formerly the starters, now the No Dunks crew.
Love it.
Hell yeah, Lamar. Respect for knowing what's up there and knowing that we count in the wedgie. So up to 4. A great, great weekend. I mean, we only had 1 as we went into the new calendar year, and now here we are at 4. So a great little start here to the season, trying to get to, I guess we're trying to get to 45, I guess, instead of 50 because of the short season, but I still have faith in
James 50. Wiseman, the rookie as well, getting a wedgie. Well, he's having a great start to his career, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And then a Hall of Famer in Melo, I like that too.
Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Trey, you have the honors of Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Well, Steph Curry was the big 62 on the evening, but it was a pretty common occurrence on Sunday all around the league, which is why today's Tweet of the Night comes from Doubles. Tweeted out a picture of Zach LaVine and Kobe White along with the caption, 62 points combined.
Wow. Good job.
Now, I will say, this came out before Steph Curry was done with his big night, but I was still dying at this tweet because it has very much the, you want 62 points from Steph Curry? We got that at home, but at home is really Kobe White and Zach LaVine combining to score for 62 points. Nonetheless, a huge for the Bulls. 3-1 on the week. And I mean, yeah, Steph Curry might have had 21 in a quarter, but Zach LaVine had 23 in the first quarter.
I
mean, I don't know
another
if that
Jordan
means that he can carry a team on his own. But I mean, he also doesn't have two MVPs and multiple titles, a Hall of Fame resume. But that was a nice weekend. 62
Bulls
combined, baby. People were saying 63 combined only for Draymond and Steph.
That's right. Hey, are the Bears going to beat the Saints here in Wild Card Weekend coming up? What's going to happen?
The Saints are good. They score a whole bunch of points, and the Bears didn't even actually earn their way into the playoffs. They're number seven this season. Usually only six teams make the NFL playoffs, but they upgraded it this year. And like I said before, they didn't beat the Packers yesterday to get into the playoffs. They just had to wait for the Los Angeles Rams to lose. So shout out to the Cardinals for coming through in the clutch there. Or no, I guess it was the other way around. The Rams won, the Cardinals lost. The Bears are in the playoffs. And unfortunately, it means they're probably just going to run it back next year. Trubisky coming back, Nagy coming back, maybe Pace. It feels the same watching the Bears and the Bulls, but I'm happy. It was a good Sunday.
All right, I can't wait to talk about it next Monday because I think that's like one of the later games on the weekend. Either this, I don't know if it's a Saturday or Sunday night. I just see the schedule going around on Twitter. All right, good luck to the Bulls. I mean, and the Bears. Pick 'em standings. Just to recap, because we didn't pick a game last time we talked to you before the new year. I'm 4-2. Tass and Lee are 3-3. Trey's 2-4. Tonight's game, Celtics Raptors. Ooh, yes, run it back from last year's East semis where the Celtics beat the Raps in 7. Raptors favored by 2.5 in this one. Now, is that because the Celtics are in a back-to-back situation here? Possibly. I don't know. Raps, you know, have lost a lot of games, been in a lot of games, though. So, Toronto's favored by 2.5. Who do you have, Lele?
I mean, the Raptors have to break through for a win sooner or later. Against the Pelicans, they fought their way back. Siakam's struggles continue, and now he's going up against the man who owned him in the bubble in Jaylen Brown, who is on fire. But the Celtics playing a lot of games lately. Give me the Celtics. Ooh. But the Raptors, they have to break through sooner or later.
But you're taking the Celtics.
I'm taking the Celtics tonight, yes. Okay. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Trey, go ahead.
I don't know if this is a swerve, Skeets. The Celtics have been better than the Raptors this season, but the Celtics are coming in. This will be their third game in 4 nights, and like Lee's saying, the Raps, they just need a win. They can't be the worst team in the league. They're not going to be the worst team in the league, and they've had some success against Boston in the past. Give me the Raptors!
Yeah, buddy, the Raptors are winning tonight. You can lock it in. Why? Because I will be standing tonight.
Oh, boy.
Taking it early. We got to get crazy. We got to turn this season around. Celtics, sorry, you're losing tonight, Beantown boys. Raps to cover the 2.5, and I believe he's not here, but I think we have Tass's pick. Let's roll this.
Give me the Raps. The last time Jason Tatum hit a game-winning shot, they lost their next 2 games. Tampa Bane's gonna put a hurtin' on his old team.
There you go. Okay, I like that. I didn't know how that was gonna work, but I actually find that very funny. We just go to Taz for his pick. So 3 of us got the Raps. Lee going with the Beantown Boys to cover. Keep in mind, the Raptors can win the game.
Yeah.
But the Celtics can still cover. That is the crazy part. All right. Email. Uh-oh.
That's me. That's me.
Hey! He's got the leaf blower. Congrats, buddy. There's no leaves even out there.
2021, one show in, and we've got a leaf blower.
Amazing. All right, let's call it there then. Email us your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Check out our new mini recap podcasts. led by Tass there in our No Dunks feed. It's on YouTube as well. It's called What You Need to Know. Again, perfect, perfect appetizer. It's up really early in the day, so you know what the heck's going on. Then we do the deep dive here. Grab your No Dunks merch at nodunks.com. Subscribe to The Athletic already. I don't know why I keep telling you to do this. Just do it. No Dunks. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks to tell them we sent you. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, a true bean dad would have given his kid beans. That dad you heard about was Can Opener Dad.
Embrace the day, people. You could stay, ooh, every day. And I'd be happy every minute. It's been so long.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.